Hey everyone, welcome back to Who's There. I'm your host, Allison. If you're new here, thank you for joining us. And if you're returning, thank you for coming back. This is a podcast where I talk to a new horror fan every week because I hope to destigmatize what it means to be a horror movie fan. Because most of us are just regular people who like the adrenaline rush of being scared for some reason. And we delve into those reasons here. I'm so excited because this week we have horror fan Scott Vigil on the podcast. We are both in the horror virgin community, and he is a regular contributor to the fun over there, so I was excited to talk to him about what he loves about horror movies. He's a huge fan of possession and slasher films, and we talk about all of them. We recorded this shortly before Halloween, so there is some Halloween talk, not to make you all nostalgic. I just had such a good time talking to him because he was able to break down the juxtaposition between the movies Hereditary and Midsommar, and he was sort of able to explain to me what The Black Coat's Daughter was about because I definitely didn't understand it when I watched it. He also broke down the subtleties in the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre, so it made me appreciate that movie a little more. And just as a heads up, in the last 10 minutes you might hear meowing because Scott's very adorable and very vocal cat was in the background trying to get his attention. Did I mention that Scott once saw a ghost too? I think I've said enough. Let's get into this episode. Hey Scott, how are you?
Good. Hanging in there, taking it day by day.
Good. Are you getting ready for Halloween?
Yes, definitely getting ready for Halloween. Last night my martial arts class had our annual costume class. So everyone came up, dressed up. I was Michael Myers. We had a dude who was Johnny from Cobra Kai, and had one lady who was dressed up as a Tengu, which is a Japanese like winged bird. So lots of fun stuff. But yeah, I'm getting geared up and possibly hitting the drive-in either today or tomorrow for one of my buddy's birthdays. So
that's awesome. Well, thank you for being here and taking the time. Tell everyone a little bit about yourself, where you're from, etc.
Yeah, I'm from the Midwest, right outside of St. Louis, born and raised in the area. I do IT security for a living. Been into horror pretty much all my life. Started with my grandma and grandpa on my mom's side. Used to watch like Twilight Zone and all that kind of stuff. And then my cousins got me into like The Crow and some of those, some of that stuff. I remember being very, very young, and they had rented the original I Spit on Your Grave, and we got like 15 minutes into it, and they're like, ooh, this is way too much, even for them, who were older than me at the time. And but I've always kind of been into it, read Goosebumps and Fear Street as a kid. And then probably right around, when was it, when Scream came out, 96 or so, saw that in the theaters with a buddy, and everything kind of changed from there, and kind of went down the loophole of looking at all the slashers, all the classics, and, you know, just kind of keeping up with it ever since.
Awesome. So first things first, what's your favorite scary movie?
That is a tie, actually. So hands down favorite, like fun, I always go back to it, would be the original 1978 Halloween. Love it. It kind of solidified the slasher genre, made those rules and everything. Obviously we have Jamie Lee Curtis and her star turn right there. But the other one that, after going back and revisiting it as an older, you know, as the ages go by, the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the subtleties in that movie just really make me go, oh wow, there's a lot more to this than just, you know, chainsaw wielding crazy family of cannibals. So I kind of go back and forth between those two.
Okay, cool. What are some of the subtleties that I missed when I watched the Texas Chainsaw Massacre?
The big thing that I think is interesting is after filming that movie, Tobe Hooper and I think a decent portion of the cast ended up going vegetarian. A big part of that film was Tobe Hooper kind of taking a step back and saying, hey guys, like, because, you know, 1974, we had, you know, the Vietnam War, we had all that kind of stuff kind of going on and, you know, whatnot. And he was basically saying, hey, we're basically showing all this war atrocities and stuff on, you know, the nighttime news. And it was basically his thing of, hey, we are literally cattle lined up for the slaughter. There's even, I think it's Pam at the beginning of the film, excuse me, when they're in the van, she even talks about, like, she brings in astrology and different astrological aspects to it. And if you, and I can't remember the actual monologue she gives, but if you listen to what she says, it basically puts in place exactly what happens. So there's those little subtleties. Also, Tobe Hooper looked at it as a very dark comedy. Granted, there's not much to be laughed at in that film, but like one of the things that always cracks me up is when they're dragging Sally through the door and she's kicking and screaming, and the cook stops and he goes, "Look what your brother did to the door." Like, you're a family of cannibals who's just slaughtered and murdered and, you know, sliced and diced these teenagers, and you're worried about a broken door. So it's little things like that. I go back, and the cinematography on that thing is beautiful, 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 beautiful. And I think for me too, it's the first horror movie that genuinely scared me. Like, it was the first horror movie that made me go, I'm losing sleep. I don't know if I want to watch this. So I think that also kind of plays into that.
Oh, very cool. I think I had read before that the Texas Chainsaw Massacre was like a movie in favor of vegetarianism, which makes me like it more. I watched it sometime at the beginning of quarantine and I didn't think it was scary at all. And I was like, please kill Sally so she will stop screaming. But when I think of it from that perspective, I'm on board with it because I'm a vegetarian. So yeah. I'm like, whatever gets people to eat less or no meat, I'm a fan of.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the interesting thing too, is, you know, they kind of even this family who is literally eating humans, like that's where they get their, you know, diet from. They're not, you know, they even talk about the hitchhiker at the beginning. He talks about, you know, like, we're going out of business. They don't need us anymore. You know, they don't want to, you know, use sledgehammers. They want to use these machines, which aren't nearly as humane. And when you juxtapose that with how they kill the kids, like, it's sledgehammers. It's these very like quick, you know, deaths. And if you look back at that film, like you said, it's not scary. By today's standards, it's kind of slow. And I can understand why some people would see it boring, but there's not much blood. There's hardly any blood in that. I can see how that would definitely be one of those things where people look back and go, it's a little slow and boring by today's standards. But when you look at it in that kind of light, it kind of, in my opinion, like makes it go, well, there's something being said here.
Yeah, definitely. And I liked learning the fact that they wore the same costume the entire time.
Yes.
We know each other from the Horror Virgin community, podcast, The Horror Virgin. And that was one of their fun facts in their episode about the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. So I was like, that's disgusting. And also there was no air conditioning in that house.
No. What was it? The dinner scene, I think they said they filmed for 27 hours straight.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm good.
So that is the ultimate vegetarian movie. Have you seen the movie Don't Breathe?
Yes, I have seen Don't Breathe.
I think that is the ultimate vegan movie.
I see, and it's been probably 2 or 3 years since I've seen Don't Breathe. I need to revisit it. I remember absolutely adoring and loving that movie when I watched it, but it was one of those, like, I have a stack of need to watch. So it's like I got through it, loved it, and I was like, this is fantastic. I need to revisit that film though. I was actually vegan for about a year and a half, 2 years. Mm-hmm. And like during that vegan time, I lost a lot of weight, was definitely in a lot better shape. And then due to some health issues with my doctor, like, hey, you know, you want to incorporate some animal products, but not nearly as much. So, but with regards to, as you're saying, it's the ultimate vegan movie, please elaborate.
Because the only way that factory farms can keep up with the production of milk at the level that we consume it is by artificially inseminating cows.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. And I've seen a lot of those videos because I know they, you know, they purposely like take the calves from the babe, from the moms, and it's horrible. That's all you can really say. It's horrible.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, back on topic. So you said you got into horror first by watching The Twilight Zone. Have you seen Jordan Peele's Twilight reboot?
I have not got to see it yet because it was on CBS All Access. I want to see it. It's one of those things, like, I'm hoping that maybe if they do like a free trial, I can go and binge it, but I haven't got to watch Jordan Peele's yet. And I know they also released it in black and white, like the original Twilight Zone. So I want to really check it out.
Oh, cool. Yeah, no, I haven't seen it yet because I don't have cable. So yeah.
I have streaming services and that is it.
Yes, me too. When we were talking beforehand, you mentioned some of the movies that molded you as a horror fan. And some of those movies were Critters 2, Monsters Squad, The Old Incredible Hulk. And then you've already talked about Scream, Texas Chainsaw, and Halloween. But talk about the other ones a little bit.
So the first of those, obviously Twilight Zone, like you mentioned, that was with my grandma and grandpa. The Incredible Hulk, the old Lou Ferrigno live action show, it was only when he transformed. And I remember this very, I remember it vaguely, but when he transformed, it was very scary to me as a, 4 or 5 year old kid. So I'd have to run and grab my mom and be like, "Mom, watch this with me just while he changes so I'm not getting too scared." And from there, like, it was, hey, it's Friday night, go and rent a movie. So it was Critters 2, it was Monster Squad. And I remember at one point, my dad's like, "Oh, I can't watch Critters 2 again. We're not watching Critters 2 again. Rent something else. Get something else." Like, I would wear the tape out. But it was, more like the sci-fi horror, especially Critters 2. But they were fun and accessible without being overtly gory or overtly scary, because they balance that humor and horror, which I think is also what really attracted me and drew me to Scream. I mean, Scream has that perfect balance.
Yeah, definitely. I rewatched Scream last weekend, so. And you're wearing a Scream t-shirt now, which
I
I
am, yes.
So with transformation and sci-fi movies, have you seen The Fly?
Oh yes, actually, I've seen the, what is it, the David Cronenberg, Jeff Goldblum one. Love that film. I think it's probably, in my opinion, one of the best love stories ever put on film. Who is it? Him, and is it Gina Davis who plays the love interest?
Yeah, I
Like,
think so.
it is just a heartbreaking story, and you feel for them, you really connect with them, and it is just a, ugh. Like, I love that film, but every time I watch it, I'm gutted. Like, oof. I even, because for my 31 Days of Horror this year, I decided to go back and try to watch a lot of classics that I haven't seen. So I actually went back and watched the original The Fly with, like, Vincent Price. And it's fun. It's a nice little time capsule film. Doesn't have nearly that same, like, punch that the 1980s one does. But, I mean, it's, Jeff Goldblum in his prime. And like I said, that love story is just fantastic.
Jeff
So.
Goldblum is one of my favorites. I don't know if you can see that.
Oh, I can. Oh, that's awesome. That's wonderful.
Yeah. He was in a Broadway show back in 2005, so I made sure to stalk him down.
That makes sense.
So why do you think people who seem perfectly sane love this genre?
Well, speaking to myself, the reason that I find the people that I know and myself gravitate towards this is because it's a catharsis. It's a release. I think it was Wes Craven that said, horror movies don't create fear, they release it. So it's you're facing this fear, and it's in a safe, controlled environment. Yet, someone like myself, who I'm very empathetic, I'm overly empathetic. Like, I put myself into these characters. I put myself into these movies. And so I'm feeling what they feel. I'm, experience what they're experiencing. So at the end of it's like I've kind of faced my own fears. Like, for example, with Halloween, John Carpenter didn't list Michael Myers as, some, specific thing. He was the shape. He is the shape of fear in the original Halloween. So they even call him the boogeyman, That's what Tommy Doyle calls him. Oh, it's the boogeyman, Laurie. It's the boogeyman. The boogeyman can be whatever you're afraid of. What is your fear? That is the boogeyman, And so with that, it's facing those fears and coming out the other side stronger. Like, when I look at Sally and Laurie and Sydney and all these final girls, it's them overcoming such a difficult emotional, physical thing, and they come out stronger. They come out, maybe not always for the better. Obviously, there's trauma. The later Scream sequels definitely deal with that. But it is something that, hey, if they can do it, I can do it. Like, I don't have some mass killer chasing me around. I might have a meeting at work that I'm nervous about. But if Sally and Lori and all these people can face some knife-wielding maniac, well, I think I can talk to my team about what we need to do at work for an hour. So that's kind of where it comes for me. And at the same time, it's really fun. You got buddies with you, and hey, oh man, like, they haven't seen it, so you get to kind of see them squirm and jump, and it always creates great conversation, at least in my experience.
Yeah, definitely. That's one of my favorite things about going to the movie theaters when we could, was
Yes.
the experience of seeing being scared with people. So, You said you're doing 31 Days of Horror. What have you watched so far?
Well, I did watch Black Coat's Daughter earlier this morning. I'm about halfway, or maybe a little less than halfway through Parasite, because I've never seen Parasite yet. And I'm going in blind. I don't know the plot. I haven't watched the trailer, so we'll see. Other than that, I watched the original Omen. I watched the original Fly. Watched The Witchfinder General, which is an old Vincent Price film. A lot of classics this year. I'm trying to watch more classics that I haven't seen. Watched The Haunting, the original 1966, The Haunting.
63, I think.
Do what?
I think it's 63.
Yeah, yeah. It's in the early 60s. Yeah, I think you are correct. And I did that because I still haven't seen Haunting of Hill House, and I wanted to see the original Haunting. And I'm now, because of one of your most recent episodes you posted about on the horror version, I'm trying to find the 1999 version.
I think it's on Prime. HBO.
It's on HBO?
Yeah.
Sweet. I have HBO. I will consider that my homework. But I watched that. Let's see. What else have I watched? I've been making my way through the Purge series.
Love those.
Oh, I didn't know if I'd like the sequels. I loved the first one, but I'm liking how they're expanding that universe.
Yes, like I love it. I find them all so interesting.
I still need to watch. I've watched the first three. I need to watch, what is it, The First Purge?
Did you watch Election Year?
I did watch Election Year. I absolutely adored Election Year. I loved it. And let's see here. What else? Me and my best friend have been making our way through AHS Cult, because I hadn't seen Cult yet. And then we just finished 1984. Like 2 days ago.
Oh, okay.
So,
is it based on the book?
No. AHS for American Horror Story 1984.
I didn't know you were talking about American Horror Story. Sorry.
No. I shouldn't have shorthanded it. The IT in me kicked in. So all sorts of shorthand. Yeah, American Horror Story finished Cult and the 1984 season. Let's see here. Other than that, been rewatching some stuff. Watched the first Conjuring again, because I do love the Conjuring series. I still haven't had it in my soul to watch The Nun. I can't bring myself to watch it. I've heard nothing but bad things.
It's so bad.
I did watch, what was it, The Curse of La Llorona, and that wasn't bad, but as a Conjuring movie, it wasn't good. It was, we had the tie-in. The little small tie-in with the priest, but that was about it. But I love the Conjuring movies, so I watched the first one, and other than that, I've been slowly making my way through. What else do I have? I'm looking at my movie stack right now, looking at what I've made my way through. I did watch the Creepshow animated special on Shudder. It's good. Two shorts, one by Stephen King, one by Joe Hill. So if you like Stephen King and Joe Hill, you're in good company. But yeah, a little smattering of everything. I still have my yearly rewatch of Halloween tomorrow night, and then tonight, since it's Devil's Night, I'm going to watch The Crow.
Very cool. I've never seen The Crow, but people talk about it a lot.
It is kind of like I was saying with The Fly, with like such a great love story. That is The Crow. It is a wonderful revenge love story that is heartbreaking, beautifully shot, beautifully executed. And if you're into comics or graphic novels at all, the original graphic novel that's based off is a beautiful, beautiful piece of art. It's wonderful. It's a great read.
Okay, cool. Have you watched The Haunting of Bly Manor on HBO?
Haven't watched Bly Manor yet. No, you're good. Bly Manor and Haunting of Hill House are both on my to watch list. I did watch The Turning.
Not very
And it wasn't good. But I haven't looked back at a lot of the other makes of whether The Turning or The Screw. Is that what it was based off of? Yeah. I haven't watched any of those, so I was like, before we knew about Bly Manor, I watched that and I was like,
Bly Manor is way better. So
okay. That gives me, well, it's Mike Flanagan. That dude, in my opinion, can't do wrong. Dr. Sleep was wonderful. Hush was wonderful. Gerald's Game, as rough as that subject matter is, was beautifully, wonderfully executed.
Definitely.
So I have all the faith and patience in Mr. Flanagan that he won't let me down.
Have you discovered any new movies in your 31 Days of Horror this year that you want to let
yes.
us know about?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I just watched a couple of really, really fun ones. Tragedy Girls, which was new to me. It's a little older, but it was just a super fun, very energetic. I don't know if we're able to talk spoilers, so I don't want to give spoilers to anyone who hasn't seen it. But it's fun. It has Jack Quaid, who is in The Boys. For anyone who watches The Boys, he plays the main character, Huey. He's in it, and it's just a fun, very dark, and I do mean dark comedy, but that was super fun. Just watched the movie Detention. I don't know if you've heard of that one.
No, I haven't.
How do I explain it? It is about a serial killer who is killing off people in this high school, but it also has, it's very, quick-paced, lots of quick cuts, and very high energy, and there's also a time-traveling bear.
Okay.
So, yeah, that was interesting. The original Amityville Horror, because I'd never seen that, and, Horror Virgin did an episode of that a while back, so I was like, let's watch that, and that was a very much a slow burn, but I can understand why it's a classic. So those were some of the, those were standout, kind of surprises.
I really like Tragedy Girls. It's very funny, and then at the end, it's so dark.
Oh boy, does it get dark, but yeah, I'm here for it.
Yes, definitely. It's not too gruesome, and I like the social media aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say that they maybe tried making that movie in the early 2000s. I could be lying, but then they weren't able to because of all of the mass, the school shootings, the Columbine and everything.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, school shootings aren't going on right now, but when school was in session.
Oh, yeah. And I think even from that aspect for that, I think that they handled it as tactfully as they could, given the subject matter they were going for. They didn't glorify it, even though the Tragedy Girls are, trying to become famous and get people to follow their media. They did show them as sociopathic. They did show them as kind of cold and hey, they're cool and this is funny, but that they're not all right upstairs. There's something off. So I think they bounced that real well, which is one of the reasons I really, really like that movie.
So besides Mike Flanagan, do you have any favorite horror directors?
Yeah, absolutely. Huge fan. I've loved, what I've seen of Jordan Peele, obviously. You need to watch The Twilight Zone still, but both Us and Get Out were favorites. I love me some Ari Aster. I know he's kind of divisive, in the horror community, but loved Hereditary. Unlike what Todd would say, it was maybe a 6 or 7 on the scary scale for me. I wanted more, but it's a phenomenal movie. And I saw Midsommar 3 times in the theater, so I saw the original one twice, and then I saw the director's cut once.
Are you okay?
Yeah, no, I'm good. Yeah, that was that that movie was very, very just beautifully shot, and I had to go back and go, wait, what did I miss? I want to look for all these little subtle things. So
what did you discover when you watched Midsommar multiple times?
So what I noticed, especially comparing it to Hereditary, is there are bookends. With Midsommar, it is to me coming out of a toxic relationship and not necessarily getting into a good relationship, because it's all about relationships. At the beginning of that movie, excuse me, Dani is alone. She's grieving. She's trying to reach out to Christian, who should be there for her, but isn't. And not only is he not there for her, he doesn't want to be there for her. And so she's kind of alone. And what I've noticed upon rewatches is she takes what she didn't get from Christian, and it's almost like she projects it onto the group in Sweden. And she's almost kind of led down that road. She's almost kind of guided down it. The one friend who's from that group even says, do you love Christian? Do you feel held by him? And so you have that opening scene right before it pans out of the window and we see the name And she's sitting there just crying, like just in a ball, fetal position, crying. And Christian is so disconnected. He's just kind of like patting her on the back. She has no one really there for her. And you juxtapose that with that cathartic ending when all the women are around her and she's caught Christian cheating on her with the girl. And she is just like just letting it all out. And all these people are screaming with her and crying with her. And it's that cathartic feeling of, hey, you're not alone. Your feelings are valid. However, the thing is, you know, with that group, like, what is it? Once they hit 72, you know, they have their, a ritual. So is she really trading one thing, which was toxic? Her and Christian's relationship was toxic, but is she actually trading it for something better? And that's kind of what I picked up on. And especially juxtaposing that with Hereditary. And Hereditary, it's a family who loses a family member, but in Midsommar, it's Dani who literally loses her family. She is a single person losing a family versus Hereditary, where it's a family losing a single person with regards to Charlie and Hereditary. So that's kind of what I picked up on. And like the fact that, who was it? They kind of set it up where a lot of these characters, like, it's kind of, once they get there, it is pretty much guaranteed off the bat that Dani is going to be May Queen, that she's going to be that survivor. And that ending shot with her smiling and like you see the flames kind of playing off her face, like she is happy, but at what cost? So that's kind of the things I kind of, I guess, picked up on. Sorry for the long rant there.
Oh no, please. That's why I love talking to horror fans, because I feel like I'm such a surface level horror viewer that I don't pick up on these things. And I never would have thought about the comparison between one person losing their family and a family losing one person. So that was really interesting.
Yeah.
I haven't seen Midsommar since I saw it in theaters, however many years ago. So I think I should rewatch it.
I don't want to say 2020 has been going on for 4 years, but that was just last year. That was 2019.
Fuck.
I know. As far as your classic directors, I love Craven, not just his Nightmare on Elm Street stuff, like Serpent in the Rainbow, People Under the Stairs. I'm a big Carpenter fan. The Thing is a favorite, as is Christine, being a Stephen King fan. Who else? I like Hitchcock, a lot of the classic Hitchcock films. I'm trying to think of who else I could probably throw in there, because I know I'm forgetting one, and I can't remember. Oh, David Lynch. I know Lynch might not be considered horror by many, but his stuff is always so just like slightly off center that it does leave me kind of going like Lost Highway is still one of the creepiest off-putting feelings of film that I've seen. So
we'll have to check it out. I'm not familiar with a lot of David Lynch. Did he do Twin Peaks?
He did. Yes, he absolutely did Twin Peaks. And again, Twin Peaks is not for everybody. Like I love that show. Me and my buddy will sit there and talk, you know, theories about what that show is to this day. And both of us have watched it upteen times. And the best thing is there's no wrong answer. Like, what do you want that show to be? Lynch is not for everybody. I would say it really depends on what you want. My favorite Lynch film, hands down, would be Mulholland Drive. Hands down, no contest. I don't know if that's the easiest movie of his for someone to watch. I probably would recommend Blue Velvet, which has Dennis Hopper and Kyle MacLachlan and Laura Dern. And that, I think, is a little more straightforward of a plot. But yeah, Lynch has always made me kind of stop and just think. And since he doesn't give you the answers, it's the perfect, like we were talking before, you finish it, you talk about it with your buddy, you kind of go, oh, well, I didn't pick up on this little subtlety. What does this mean to you? And how did you see this kind of going? So that's why he's really, really fun.
All right, cool. I'll have to check out some of his stuff. I think I tried watching an episode of Twin Peaks and I found it a little slow, but maybe I wasn't in the right headspace for it.
Twin Peaks can be slow and it is uneven, primarily because it's a TV show. So different directors, different writers.
So before we started recording, you said you saw a ghost one. You definitely need to tell me that story.
Sure. Oh, absolutely. So I want to say I was probably 5 or 6. And my mom, my younger sister, and I were staying over at my aunt's house. And so she had one of those old fold-out couches. And with regards to the story, my Uncle Roger was an over-the-road truck driver. So he was out of town. And so it was just me, my mom, and my sister sleeping on this fold-out couch. And, my aunt's sleeping in the back. I wake up middle of the night and I look over, I pull the covers down, and I look over to where the armchair, the chair that my uncle would usually sit in if he's home, is. And there is this young girl, probably 10 or 11, in this blue dress and this blue bonnet tied under her neck. And I just kind of stop. And she waves at me, and I'm like, okay, I'm a little kid. I'm like, okay, I'm probably half asleep. So I cover my eyes, peek out again from the covers, and she's still there. And she points to the door. And I'm like, okay, look over the door. I don't see anything. And I just kind of roll over, close my eyes, and like try to fall asleep, can't peek again for a third time. She's still in that chair. So finally, I'm just like, okay. I'm just not going to look again. I'm not going to open my eyes. I'm just going to eventually fall asleep. So, fall asleep, tell my mom about it earlier, later that morning when everyone's woke up, and she kind of dismisses it. She ends up telling my aunt, she's like, yeah, so, they called me Little Scott because my dad's name is Scott. She's like, Little Scott says he saw this ghost overnight. And my aunt's like, oh, yeah, no, I've seen it. My cousin Billy, her son has seen it. The young girl with the blue dress and the bonnet, yeah, she's been around. So my aunt, when my cousin Chelsea was a little bitty baby, she had her covered up with a blanket. It was the middle of winter. My Uncle Roger was out of town, and she woke up in the middle of the night to turn Chelsea over, take the blanket off and fold it and whatnot. She wakes up, goes to check on Chelsea, blanket's already off, folded in the corner. Chelsea's flipped. No one else was home. And then my cousin Billy said that one time when he was a teenager, he got out of the shower and was like, drying off and stuff. And he saw that same ghost, that same girl in the bathroom mirror. So it's one of those things where, like, I didn't talk to any of them. I didn't know anything about this. My mom even dismissed it. But I mean, to this day, I know what I saw. And I get kind of chills when I talk about it. So.
Wow, that is so creepy. Did you ever think to do any research into who the girl is?
I asked my grandma, I asked my aunt, and that area around there used to be farmland and there was plantations back in the day, if I could figure out who to talk to and how to like start tracking that stuff down.
So there was an article that came out a while back saying that horror fans are handling quarantine better or lockdown better than non-horror fans. Why do you think that is?
I think for a lot of people, again, myself included here, it's because for us, like it's a, we see these horrible things in these movies or in the books. Like it's almost like we've kind of been conditioned, like, yeah, we get it. Like, hey, it's a zombie apocalypse, Oh, you're the one who been got bit. Like, you're not gonna hide it from me. We're gonna play this smart. And so also I like to believe that a lot of horror fans have a lot more empathetic heart, a lot more care for their fellow humans. We see that a lot in the Horror Virgin group. That group is one of the most supportive and caring and loving groups out there. And it's all horror fans. And so I think that with that love of horror comes that love and understanding and empathy towards one another. So with regards to the pandemic, like, I have friends and family and stuff like that who are autoimmune compromised. The last thing I want to do is, get them sick. And I don't want it on my conscience that if I am out, that I might get someone else sick. That's the last thing I would want. So I think that with regards to horror, it kind of elevates that like sense of understanding and caring for one another.
Oh, that's a great answer. What's your favorite pandemic movie?
Ooh, I guess if I had to say like Point Blank off top of my head, I think it would have to be Outbreak.
Oh, okay. That's a classic.
Yep. I haven't seen it in years, but I remember loving that movie as a kid. And it just kind of stuck with me. I love that movie.
Yeah, I remember
So.
watching it like when I was under 10 years old. I think that was my first pandemic movie, and then I went back and rewatched it at the in like March of
Yeah.
this year. So
Does it hold up?
I think so. Yeah. Yeah,
Okay.
it definitely does. It's on HBO right now. So
Oh, even better. I will definitely have to go back and check it out then.
yeah, as is Contagion. So
Ooh, I haven't seen Contagion yet.
oh, okay. Immediately after, stop watching whatever
Parasite.
Parasite. Parasite's great. It's great. But go watch Contagion.
Okay, I can do that.
So how do you decide what to watch when you're looking for something to watch?
It depends on what mood I'm in. If it's just a, hey, I want something on in the background, I'll put something on that I've already seen 1,000 times. But if it's something I haven't seen, because I'm very like I am very like I like to understand the movie. I like to sit there and say I've seen it. I will make sure that, hey, I have my time blocked out and I'm gonna watch this film. And like for an example with The Black Coat's Daughter, I finished it, went back, was reading the synopsis, was like reading some articles on what it was about, because when I sit down and choose to watch a movie, it's, I'm trying to gain something from watching it. Even, when I rewatch Halloween each year, it's okay, well, here's some of the themes I picked up on. Can I reinforce those themes, or does what I originally saw not really hold much water anymore? But other times it's just, hey, I remember this was a fun movie. Let's put it in and enjoy. Like that was me with Tragedy Girls. I kind of went in going, I heard great things. It looks pretty slick. Let's see. And the hour and a half went by like that, So, that's kind of what it comes down to. Like right now, literally right now, if I'm choosing a movie, I have made it my own mission that it has to be something I haven't seen. Because I have one, two, three, I think four stacks over there of unwatched movies right now. So pandemic plus it being October and Halloween, let's watch stuff we haven't watched.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I have a spreadsheet. What did you think of The Black Coat's Daughter?
Loved it. Absolutely loved it. Another one I went into blind. I had heard nothing but great things about it and kept putting it off and putting it off and putting it off. And I loved it. I thought that especially their use of sound, the sound design and the score of that film and the atmosphere it created was phenomenal. Loved it. I'm a big fan of Emma Roberts, big fan of I don't want to mispronounce her name, but the main actress from Chilling Tales of Sabrina, who plays the other main girl in there.
Kiernan Shipka.
Shipka, yeah. And I loved her in Chilling Tales of Sabrina. I didn't realize that she was in it. I knew Emma Roberts was because of the poster, but I didn't know what to expect from that film. And it was atmospheric. There were definitely some jump scares that did get me. It helped that I was watching it at 4 a.m. in my basement in the dark, but setting does come into play with horror movies. So, but I absolutely loved it. I thought it was great, and it was a slow burn for sure, but I don't mind slow burns, not at all. I can take slow burns all day. I love The Witch, which is also another super slow burn. So
I found it to be a little too slow for me. I don't know if I really got the point of it. What did you find while you were reading about it?
the main thing is it's talking. Well, the big thing is and this will, I guess I will say spoilers just in case anyone wants to say. And the big thing is the whole demonic possession aspect, that the main girl, she is possessed by whatever this weird demon is. And you see it every once in a while in the background. And then throughout the movie, it's cutting between her and Emma Roberts. And it, to me, what I found with one of the things I was reading was they were saying that it's talking about and making a point of these boarding schools kind of stripping away the individuality of people, and then kind of going, hey, well, especially at the end, like the priest, when he's doing the exorcism to banish it, he goes, you're no longer welcome here. You aren't welcome here. Get out, get out, get out. But that is kind of mirrored at the beginning when he's asking her, hey, where are your parents? Why aren't they here yet? And she's like, well, how long's the drive from here to there? He goes, well, maybe they got caught in some snow. They should be here in a day. But the big thing is remember, you can't stay here. You have to leave for winter break. You can't stay here. So it's that, it's kind of the, how do they word it? It was giving you a place to call home that you're not fully always welcome at. And throughout the movie, you even see that when she's taking the phone call and the demonic voice is telling her, hey, you know, you can stay here as long as you want. Here's what you need to do. And so she does what she does. But that was the big thing, is kind of showing that, like, sometimes what you think is home or comfortable or safe is not that. I'm still looking to understand the very last frame and understand that part, because Emma Roberts goes back to the school and you think she's going to go through with what she does, but she ends up leaving and you see her turn around and she just starts crying, and then credits. So I'm still trying to really piece that together. But as far as the religious aspect of it, I really, really enjoyed it. And I'm a sucker for possession and horror and haunt films and stuff like that. So,
yeah, you had mentioned, I think, that you love possession and haunted house movies.
Yes.
What do you love about them?
It kind of comes from, I grew up Catholic. And then I was Pentecostal for a little bit in high school. So having that religious background, I think, kind of makes me go, ooh, like possession, you know, ghosts. And obviously having seen a ghost myself, and there's just something that for me, you know, you can show me all the gore and, you know, blood and guts you want. That doesn't normally frighten me. It's nasty. It's disgusting, but it's not exactly scary. But when you show, like, say, the taking of Deborah Logan, when you show someone who is, you know, who is obviously not right, they have something taken over them, they are out of control of their body and mind, and knowing that, you know, like with taking it, Deborah Logan, it starts off with them documenting this Alzheimer's patient, like knowing that that is real stuff that people do go through makes it a bit more realistic. And, you know, with the haunted house type stuff, who hasn't been in an unfamiliar house or a hotel or something and heard a bump or a bang, and, you know, your mind starts, you know, as the ghetto boys would say, playing tricks on you. So that's kind of why I gravitate towards them, because it's the atmosphere. You know, you can make a bloodless, goreless horror movie with atmosphere and sound and noise, and it'll be, for me at least, 500 times scarier than, oh, he cut off their arm with a chainsaw.
Definitely. I agree. I recently watched for the first time Hell House LLC, and I loved it.
Oh, yeah. Hell House is wonderful. And I won't give spoilers, but if you haven't watched them, for certain people, the sequels do vary with what you might like or don't like. It depends on how much you like Answered.
What is Answered?
As in, like, they kind of go into the history and more explanation of what that house is.
Oh, okay.
And the history of the house.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. Maybe I'll watch. Mm-hmm. I'll watch them, because I do like that.
Yeah, I watched all three, and I think the director's cut of Hell House LLC 1 is supposed to be coming out on Prime tomorrow.
Oh, fun! Oh,
and I don't know what that entails, but I'm probably going to watch it.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be Halloween, so why not?
Exactly.
Yeah. So, speaking of setting, have you ever had any noteworthy experiences seeing a movie in theaters?
I'll do serious first, then I'll do joking. So I think probably one of the best experiences I had in the theater was when I saw A Quiet Place. I went by myself, and there was maybe a smattering of 20 people in that theater. Went midday, and, you know, it starts off and people are kind of munching popcorn and drinking and, you know, opening stuff. Within 20 minutes, people weren't making noise. Like, it was literally, like, it was so quiet, we could hear the next theater over. Like, so that was very awesome to see all these people kind of just buy into that, you know, buy into that universe. Like, no, shut up. We got to be quiet now. So that was wonderful. One of the funnest things I did was, when Halloween 2018 opened, me and my buddy went dressed as Michael Myers and a local theater. We knew the manager on duty. And she's like, yeah, come up, dress up in costume and stand outside the theater as people walk out and kind of give them a little bit of a scare. So that was super fun. And then when I saw Jason X in the theater, I was a teenager and it was a midnight showing and there was probably maybe 40 people in the theater. And again, it's Jason X. It's the 10th one in the series. I hope you know what you're getting with a Jason movie by the 10th installment. So there's a part at the beginning where one of the characters is like, do you know who Jason Voorhees is? And people were riffing and making fun of the movie out the gate. So I just, top of my head, I go, I love him. He was the best lover I ever had. He got me going. He used nipple clamps and everything. And people start laughing. And then like 20 minutes later in that film, that same character is tied up in the bed and he has nipple clamps on. No joke. Go back and watch the film. It's a thing. And someone stood up in the theater like, holy crap, that dude was right. And people start laughing. So we're walking out of the theater and this one person behind us, they're like, thanks for ruining the movie for me. And I said, hey, I wasn't trying to ruin the movie, but dude, it's Jason 10. Like, what were you expecting? Okay. The only thing that ever topped that was when I, and this isn't horror related. Well, I guess given that it's based on real life, it's horror related. When I walked out of seeing Titanic, me and my friend Zach, just as a joke, I'm walking out and I go, man, can't believe the boat crashed. And there is this group of young people waiting to get in. And one of them turns to us and just starts bawling and goes, thanks for ruining it for me. I'm going,
oh my God.
And I know what you're going to say. A lot of people go, yeah, but no one's that stupid. Keep in mind when they did the re-release for like the 20th anniversary or whatever, people were tweeting, oh my gosh, could you imagine if this had really happened?
I didn't know that happened.
Oh. Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, so, I'm sad for the future.
But, those are some of the ones that really stuck out to me. I don't remember the actual scene of the movie, but when I was young, I remember my dad picking me up to go take me to see Ghostbusters 2 as a random special thing when I was young, and that always kind of stuck with me, so.
Yeah, I had another friend over, friend on recently who also got yelled at for laughing too much and making fun of Jason X too much. I think it was Jason X. So, yeah.
It wouldn't surprise me.
People need to, like, calm down a little bit.
Breathe. It's going to be okay. It's a movie. Okay? Yeah. It's a movie.
So, what's the movie theater situation like right now in Missouri?
AMC has started opening back up. We have another one out here, Marcus Theaters. They started opening up both in limited capacity. I haven't braved it to see what they mean by limited capacity, just because the issue that we're having is St. Charles, the actual county where I'm at, they have pretty much said, hey, wear a mask if you want to. We're not going to make you wear a mask. But hey, if you want to, cool. And a lot of the restaurants are moving away from social distancing even. So it's one of those things like, I really, really want to get back into the theater. I'm not willing to take that risk. So there is a drive-in, the Skyview drive-in, like about 40 minutes away over in Illinois. And I mean, you're obviously going to be social distance if you're in a drive-in. And it's, you know, you're in your car. And they, with it being Halloween, they're doing, you know, spooky movies. So they have two theaters or two screens, you know, one for the kids, one for the adults. And so that's been, you know, if I want to go see a movie, that would be how I would do it.
Okay. So what was the last horror movie that you saw in theaters before everything shut down?
I believe it was the Child's Play remake.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I am too. I went in. I did. I think it was Roger Ebert who he said anytime he went to see a movie, He went in with no expectations. He said, I'm going to go in thinking I'm going to like this movie. And that's how I kind of view movies. But, oof, that was not good. I wanted to like it. I really did. I like Aubrey Plaza. I like Mark Hamill. I thought he sounded decent as the voice of Chucky. Nope.
Yeah, I've never seen any of the original Child's Play movies just because they don't really interest me. But I went to go see this one, and I was just like, that was bad.
The Child's Play franchise is interesting. My ex-wife, that was her favorite franchise. So I'm well-versed in the original Child's Play, all of them. And I think it's interesting because especially like, you know, we talk about, you know, Halloween and Friday 13th and all these. But with Child's Play, with the exception of this remake, all the other movies in that series, which I think there's 7 or 8 now, which is crazy, are all written and directed by the same guy. So, like, if nothing else, like, at least it has that same writer-director who kind of keeps up on the trends of the time, you know? The first one was a straight kind of supernatural slasher. And then when you get into Bride of Chucky and Seed of Chucky, like, those were right around the time of Scream and all, like, the self-referential meta-humors and stuff like that, you know? Like, in Bride of Chucky, you have Jennifer Tilly being killed by a doll voiced as her, but voiced by her. So there's all that self-referential humor as well. And then, you know, within more recent ones with Curse and Cult, they're more dark, they're more sinister, a little more violent than some of the middle entries of the series. So they do evolve over time, but I completely understand, like, your mileage may vary with the Child's Play movies, because the thing I always hear is, it's a doll. How is that scary?
Yeah, you kick it.
Exactly. Although, I will always go back and say, I don't care what you say, that last segment of Cat's Eye with the little weird puppet thing always scared the holy bejesus out of me when I was a kid. So
good to know. So there have been a lot of movies that have been postponed this year because of COVID. Which one are you most upset about?
Well, initially it was Quiet Place 2. Because I had actually planned to make the drive to Nashville for the Horror Virgin meetup for that. So that was the first one. Once they pushed back Halloween Kills, then I was like, ugh. But in addition to those, I really wanted to see Candyman. Was super excited for Candyman. And I'm sure there's others that I'm forgetting, but those are the big three. Candyman, Quiet Place 2, and Halloween Kills. And we just got the Halloween Kills trailer yesterday, which, you know, 30 seconds, but hey, cool. But yeah, those are the big three. Like, oh man, I'm looking forward to all three of those, and I don't know which one would take that top spot. Even being a huge Michael Myers Halloween fan, I don't know, man. Like, that last a trailer for Candyman with a stop motion animation, that blew me away. Blew me away. And the little teaser trailer they had for Quiet Place 2, I'm like, oh, so is this a, like, a prequel? Then it kind of jumps ahead to the future. Like, what are we getting with this? So all three of them have me excited in different ways.
Yeah. It's so sad that they've all been postponed.
Yep.
So
thanks, COVID.
Are there any horror movies that you love that people generally don't like?
Ooh, let me think about that. Horror movies that people don't like, I don't know about that, but I know that there are a few that most people look at me and go, really, you like that? I actually very much as I despise everything else this man has done, I really did enjoy Green. I don't care for Eli Roth as far as a director, like Cabin Fever, Hostel. I have no desire to even want to watch them. I've read synopses. I don't care. Every person in that movie seems like an asshole who deserves what they get, and I don't want to waste 2 hours of my time. However, one of my best friend, she loves more the, like, very graphic extreme horror, and so she's like, I've read about this. I really want to watch Green Inferno, and I'm like, okay, I will go ahead and watch this with you, because, like, she's the kind who's like, let's watch Human Centipede 2, and I'm like, I'm good. No, we don't. I have my limits, you know. So I agreed to watch Green Inferno, and overall, like, it's not like, oh my gosh, I want to watch this and everyone should watch this movie, but it is a well shot and well plotted movie, and the gore wasn't nearly as bad as I was expecting it to be. It's still gory for an Eli Roth movie, but the majority of people I hear talk about the movie, they're like, that movie sucked. It was horrible. Why? There's nothing good. Oh, Eli Roth, we get it. Americans shouldn't leave America. Stay in America. That's pretty much the synopsis of any Eli Roth film. However, the fact that they did use actual indigenous tribes, and I do believe that a portion of the film's proceeds went to actually like preserving their land and preserving the forest and stuff like that. Like, the part of me that cares about the environment and all that kind of stuff was very like, oh, well, that's kind of surprising. So that kind of endeared it to me a little bit more as well.
Okay, that's really interesting. I've actually never seen that one, but that doesn't surprise me because I did see Cabin Fever in theaters when it came out, and I was like, never watching that again. And I've never seen Hostel because when I travel, I stay in hostels, so I don't need that drama.
Well, I mean, and that's the other thing too is, again, it's scare tactics. He's literally making scare tactics. Don't leave the outside world's a scary place. No, just for your listeners, I have never stayed in a hostel, but I have plenty of friends who travel the world. They do van life, do all that stuff. Hostels, by and large in general, aren't like that. Don't let that be the case. So,
yeah, no, hostels are amazing. I love them. So if you could remake one horror movie, which one would it be?
I would say if I could remake one horror movie and only one, I would have to pick The Gate.
I've never heard of it.
So The Gate was one of those I kind of watched and rewatched and rewatched as a kid. Basically, the plot breakdown is that these kids end up opening a gate, like a huge hole in their backyard that lets all sorts of like crazy creatures through. And at the end of it, they, you know, it turns like evil and all this. But the main reason I would want to remake it is at the time in the mid-80s when it came out, it was very like a lot of the end parts were like stop motion animation. And they were choppy even for that time period. So going back and remaking that with like actual good practical effects, practical, not CGI, practical effects, and just kind of giving it a nice like update, I think would be fun. Because that was just a fun movie. It wasn't overly scary. It wasn't overly violent or anything like that. I think it was PG-13, even by 80s standards. So it was just a fun movie, and I think that would be a fun movie to kind of revisit and remake.
Okay, cool. I'll take a look into the original. Is it streaming anywhere right now?
I don't know if it's streaming. If you do find it streaming, and if both of them are streaming, I would just avoid the sequel.
Okay.
The sequel is not good.
Yeah, that happens so often with sequels, but do you have a favorite horror movie sequel?
Oh yeah, hands down, Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2.
Oh, okay.
yeah, not like it takes everything that Tobe Hooper was trying to get across in the first one with the dark comedy and the undertones, and he just kind of goes, "You guys didn't get it the first time. I'm just gonna double down the second time." So like, if you look at like the movie poster for Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, it is a literal parody of The Breakfast Club.
Oh, okay.
So that's kind of don't get me wrong, it is still a frightening, scary movie, but I mean, you have Dennis Hopper dual wielding chainsaws fighting Leatherface. So it's interesting. And then again, it's one of those, it's just a fun movie. Like, it knows what it is. It's not taking itself too seriously, and it's just fun. So
awesome. All right. Well, my last question is, if you had to spend quarantine with one horror villain, who would it be?
Man, that's a dark answer because I don't think I'd like it. But I think the funny answer would be Jigsaw, because at least there'd be games to play. But I don't know if I want to play those games. I would probably have to say, I mean, I'm just gonna say Michael Myers. I mean, he's quiet. He's, you know, he's not overtly violent, so I mean his messes aren't gonna be too much, and he kind of sticks to himself.
Okay,
so yeah,
as long as you wouldn't want to talk to anyone, that's a good answer. Well, thank you so much for being here, Scott. This was really fun.
Yeah, thank you for the time and the opportunity.
Yeah, I'll see you around the Harbor Virgin community.
Absolutely.
That's it for this week's episode of Who's There. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Scott, and thanks again to Scott for taking the time to chat with me today. If anyone knows how to go about helping Scott look up the history of old haunted homes so we can find out who the girl in the blue dress is at his aunt's house, email us for sure, or reach out to him. You can find a link to his Instagram in the show notes, and he told me just before this episode went up that he's raising money on Indiegogo to fund his first feature film called Christmas Chaos, so the link to donate to that will also be in the show notes. As always, we'd really appreciate it if you could take a second to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and subscribe to our feed wherever you listen to us. Thank you again to everyone who's already left us a review. We really appreciate it as it really helps people find us. You can follow us on Twitter at Who's There Pod or on Instagram at Who's There Podcast. And if you have any questions, comments, concerns, horror movie recommendations, or you'd like to be a guest, shoot us an email at thewhostherepod@gmail.com. Until next time, stay scary and wear a mask.